Hi, Simon here. My new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, is now available for pre-order as an ebook and audiobook on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. This book shares many incredible near-death experiences, each with verifiable proof that challenges everything we think we know about consciousness and the afterlife. In the book, individuals whose hearts had stopped and whose brains had flatlined saw things that were later verified. Things they should not have been able to see, because by all medical understanding, they were dead. These are real stories, backed by real evidence, that will make you question what lies beyond. If you're fascinated by near-death experiences and mysteries of life and death, pre-order your copy today. Again, that's Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, available for pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife. I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Galadriel Crump about her book, What Have You Learned? Demystifying My Childhood NDE. Galadriel had a near-death experience at 10 years old due to hypothermia. Hi Galadriel, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hi Simon, thank you.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called What Have You Learned? Demystifying My Childhood NDE. So can you tell us, how old were you? How did it all start?
Well, I was about 10 years old. I had been homeschooled, and I lived in a little small town outside of the city, obviously, and where farms are located. I guess it started, on a cold winter, and I had hypothermia, and I was outside. I went into hypothermia a lot as a kid. And I thought it was the body's, miraculous way of keeping itself warm. I'm like, wow, human bodies are so cool. And I'm like, why do we even have to wear a jacket, or a winter coat? Why do we have to do that? That doesn't make any sense if our body just gets warm. Little did I know that was your body getting ready to shut down, as a matter of fact. And I went into hypothermia a lot, so much so that it was normal. And what ended up saving me most of the time was my bladder. I would have to go pee and I'd run inside. Sorry, too much information, but that would keep me alive. I'd go inside and be warm. And because that's the thing with hypothermia, is to stay alive, if you're in the later stages, you need to slowly warm up your body, not warm it up quickly. Otherwise, all that cold blood in your extremities are going to reach your heart and it's going to stop your heart. And that's what ended up happening to me. And because I remember having heart pains and being unable to move my arms. But I think that answers your question. I don't want to talk forever. I know you said do go on, but gosh, that's an invitation for me to talk for, the rest of today.
You had the hypothermia, and was it that you collapsed when you were heading back to the house, and that's how the near-death experience started?
I actually made it to my bed. I remember laying down, and the body's wants to curl up into a ball to preserve heat in the chest area. And that's what I ended up doing in the snow. I remember on my way to the house, and I remember my dad being like, "What are you doing? Get up, go inside." And, and I kept taking my jacket off because he kept putting it back on me, and that it actually, I started having heart pains, but that was after I had talked to my dad in our milk house, which actually had a heater in it. So I'm like, okay, I know what started it, because our farmhouse was cool enough that if I hadn't used the space heater in the milk house, maybe I would have still been alive. But I had used that, and I felt like a shock to my heart. And it was pain with every time that my heart beat. It felt like excruciating pain, very tight. So at least I know that if I ever have heart problems, I can feel them, because some people don't feel their heart problems. So I'm like, I guess that's a plus. But I made it inside the house. I kept laying down though, and I kept trying to curl into a ball. I tried to go up the stairs. It was really hard. Earlier, what's actually funny is that I had made it up a ladder, unable to use my left arm. My right arm could move, but I could very slowly move it. Like maybe it took me like 40 seconds to be able to slowly lift my right arm up to get me up the ladder, because I had to climb the ladder to get hay for the animals. And that was the thing that really kept me going. The understanding these animals need something from me. I can't just give up and lay down and take a nap. I have to do this. And so that gave me motivation to keep going, keep going, keep going. And it was interesting though, because I couldn't feel anything in my left arm, and my right arm was starting to become numb, but I had some sensation and enough to still be able to, my brain could still communicate with my right arm, but just, you know, just barely, because it wasn't listening to me. I was really upset my arm wasn't listening. But you know how when you get cold, your fingers, if you get too cold, that is, your fingers, they stop responding as quickly. And so that was my entire arm. My entire body was not responding as quickly as I had wanted. But anyway, sorry, trying to get back on track here. I did make it into the house. And I made it into the bed, and, it was such a sense of relief to be able to, you know, let go, because it felt like I just, the entire time being out, like walking inside the house after I started having those heart pains, was that I just wanted to let go. And by let go, I mean, I wanted to lay down and I wanted to just sleep. And so that's what I thought happened. I thought that I had fallen asleep, but waking up in such a beautiful scene afterwards.
I think in the book you said the first thing you noticed were the vivid colors. Was it really almost like everything was glowing?
I wouldn't exactly say glowing. I would say everything was just more colorful. Like if you took a camera and you took a picture of something and you turned up the saturation or the vibrancy of the photo, that's what everything kind of looked like. I don't know if you've, since you're into psychic things and spiritual things, paranormal, if you've ever, have you ever astral traveled before?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's okay. You don't have to. but I would say for anybody who has that's listening, it's very similar to astral traveling. And I had spent a good portion of my life trying to learn how to astral travel because my sister said that she could do it. And she was like, it's very similar to what you experienced. And she had it set in her mind that I astral traveled. But considering everything that I went through, I'm not sure if anybody during astral projection has had a life review and all that stuff. But it is so similar, because when I first astral projected, I thought that I had died again. And I looked back at my body and I was like, but then I felt kind of like still connected. It felt like kind of a tug towards my body. And so I'm like, okay, I didn't experience that when I had died. But the fact that I'm astral projecting outside of my body, I can still feel a connection to it. So I guess that's one of the differences. But yeah, everything was extremely vivid in color. I thought it was so beautiful. I remember after my experience had happened, I was sitting in the snow looking at it, crying, because it wasn't as sparkly as it had been during the experience. My sister made fun of me for it, whatever. But when it was during the experience, it was more than just white sparkles on the snow, like how we see it today. was like pink and yellow and blue and I'd probably say magenta in there. There's so many colors in it. It was gorgeous.
Because you say that seeing in spirit is not like sight when you're in your human body. You see 360 degrees or is it something else?
Yes and no. I found that when I wanted to pay attention to my surroundings, I could see I could see in 360, which is more like I would relate that to being in the human body and being like someone who's hyper aware of everything, but without the anxiety. So just being hyper aware of everything that's happening around you, but not knowing in detail what exactly is going on. At least that's how it was for me. Now, when I say in detail, I mean that I was, when I wanted more detail or more information about something that was in my environment, say I was interested in what my dad was thinking, then I would go over there and I wouldn't hear his thoughts or his intentions unless I actually wondered what they were. And I know that to be true because I went over to my sister and I didn't care to hear what she was thinking or feeling. I just wanted to observe her. I didn't want to hear what was going on. Didn't matter to me. But it mattered what my parents were thinking. I think that answers that question.
So you came out of your body and you went outside and you went over to your dad and you could hear his thoughts. What happened with that?
So at first, I don't know if I mention it in the book right away, but later on when I'm speaking with the beings, I know that I write about it in the version that I gave you. But I had seen what appeared to be like a shadow person or a shadow figure. And you being into paranormal things, you probably know what those are, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So whatever that is, it was near my dad. And I didn't know what it was doing there, but I didn't care to interact with it. But I wanted to be with my dad. And when I went over to my dad, it went away. And when I went over to my dad, I noticed that he had sad thoughts. And I could see that he had like an energy around his body. And it would change in color and it would ebb and it would flow. And it wasn't very strong. And I thought, okay, that's cool. I can see whatever that is now. Everything that's living seems to have it. That's cool. The shadow person didn't have it. Didn't seem to have it, at least. And, but anyway, I went over to my dad and he seemed kind of sad and he had really like self-defeating thoughts. And I didn't, you know, obviously, you know, most kids want their parents to be happy. So I gave him a hug because I was like, poor dad. And my thought at the time was, I love you. Don't be sad. You're not the worst dad. I don't think. And then his thoughts changed for the better. He seemed, you know, more happy or, you know, he wasn't being self-defeating. And he says my nickname, which is Gelly. And he goes, Gelly? And he turns to his right and he's looking around for me. And, you know, obviously he doesn't see me. But later on, when I had finally remembered, hey, I can tell some of this story to my family, see what they think of it. I was so excited. I said, Dad, I interacted with you. Did you sense me? Did you know I was there? And he said, I felt like you were standing behind me and I thought you were next to me. So I turned and I said, Gelly. And I was like, but did you notice that I hugged you? And he said, yeah, you know, I felt a sense of peace come over me. And I didn't know you were hugging me, but I felt loved and peaceful. And then I thought of you and it felt like you were right next to me. And I was like, yeah, because I was. Yeah, I don't know how off the track I'm getting here.
No, that's great. But you say you didn't pay much attention to your sister.
No. I don't know what you want me to go into detail with that, but yeah, no, I didn't get along with her very much because we kind of combated for attention from our parents, and we just weren't that close growing up.
Did you say that with your sister's energy, it was kind of like you could see her aura, and then when she interacted with animals, her body became brighter or something?
Yeah, at the time, I didn't know why that was happening. It was just an observation that I made. But now, with everything that I know about like aura and energy and everything like that, I assume that it's because she was feeling good. She was feeling happy. And, you know, her being young and everything like that, your body doesn't have much illness or anything that it has to really fight. And so she was just probably in a really good state of mind. But yeah, she would feed the animals, and just being around the animals, it seemed to make her energy glow a little bit brighter. Like I said, I assume it's because she's happy. And the animals, they had glows around them too.
And you had this thing of moving. Was it that you just thought of being somewhere and then you were there?
Yeah. And I know a lot of people who have near-death experiences say it was instant or practically instantaneous. No, it wasn't instantaneous for me. There was a sense that I was moving. More so it felt like being pulled to my destination. In some instances, you know, sometimes I was actively being like, I want to go this direction and this direction and this direction. So when I was in the house watching my mom cook, I thought to myself, I wonder what my dad's thinking. Since I can hear my mom's thoughts, I want to know what my dad's thinking. So in waking life, I would normally walk through the kitchen to the boot room and then through the garage and then out across the driveway to the barn. So as a spirit, I took that same route, but I did it really fast. So I couldn't really notice anything that was around me because I was moving so quickly. So it seemed almost instantaneous. Maybe it took a couple milliseconds. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. Why couldn't I do this before?
Were you feeling, or did you not realize that perhaps you died?
No, I didn't realize it at all. I know that I had gone back to my room and I had happened to glance at, there's a girl in my bed. But I didn't really have a connection to it, and it wasn't really important at the time. And when I had noticed, okay, yeah, there's a girl in my bed. She looks peaceful, I guess. She doesn't really have a glow around her body like everything else that I saw. Don't know why that is. And I had what seemed like a thought came to me from seemingly nowhere. You know, knowing what I know now, I assume that it was whatever you want to call them, angels, guides, beings of light, you know, whatever you want to call them. I assume that it was them telling me this, or if it was my own intuition coming out and just telling me, the answer will come. Keep being curious, you know, keep looking around. And then that's when I went back outside.
This something happened that I haven't heard of before with near-death experiences, but you went to the moon.
Yeah, that was cool. So I had seen Wallace and Gromit as a kid. It was the episode where they eat cheese on the moon. And that was why I was thinking about it that night. But before, you know, I always had a fascination with the moon. I mean, my children do too. It's just like a natural thing for some people to be interested in the moon because it's so bright. It's beautiful. Of course, it's going to capture my attention. And since you go where your thoughts and your intentions and your beliefs and your feelings lead you, that's where I happened to go. I looked at the moon and I wondered to myself, gosh, you know, it's so beautiful. I wonder what it's like on there, on the moon. And with that, I felt like I was being pulled upwards towards the moon at super fast speed. Like I said, you know, it was at the farm, you know, moving from spot to spot. It was maybe a matter of like a millisecond or a couple milliseconds. But on my way to the moon, I don't know how long that took, but it took a good amount of time, maybe a few seconds. It was long enough for me to be like, where am I going? and for me to turn my attention to how I was being pulled and how fast I was moving. That's when I full on noticed that I was moving so fast that everything kind of warped around me in a tunnel like fashion. And I couldn't really make out what was on the sides of me that I was passing or passing through. But I found myself in a big crater on the moon. And people often ask me if I saw the Earth. I did not. But one thing I did note from being what I thought was on the moon, at least, you know, I was pulled towards it. So I hope that that's where I ended up. But who knows? The astral world has got many mysteries. But I was supposedly on the moon, I guess. You know, I assume it's the moon. And space was so bright. When you're looking up at the night sky, obviously in the countryside, you can see how bright the sky looks, but it still looks dark in many spots. And it wasn't dark at all. Everything was so bright. And the moon, it obviously, the sun is bouncing its light off the moon, but it was just like daytime. You know, it didn't have a sense of nighttime.
And what was the ground like? Was it kind of exactly how we see it in pictures from the moon landings?
Yeah, everything was really, I'd say it looked white and maybe like a light gray. Yeah, I would relate it to the moon landings for sure. And I remember after my experience, I would use, I didn't have a telescope, so I had binoculars, and I would use that to look at the moon and try and stare at it, you know, just to have that sense of connection. Again, because I was like, well, I don't know. I met those beings there. So if I just look at the moon, maybe I can feel comfortable again, you know? But yeah, it is just like that. Except I'd probably say maybe it appeared brighter because, again, you know, in spirit form, everything seems to have its color turned up quite a bit. But yeah, it was very white and it did look a lot like the pictures.
Okay, so if you could walk us through what happened next.
Yeah, that's where things get a little bit fuzzy because so many things happened and it's hard to get the order right. But I guess the very first thing that happened was being on the moon. I went, okay, I'm in a crater. Cool. And I bounced around the crater. I was looking at the rocks. And then I thought to myself, well, this is kind of boring. There's not much to see here or do. And I was about to think, what do I do next? And then I felt the presence of something behind me to my right. And so I must have not been seeing, you know, I wasn't in 360 mode because I want to focus on the details of looking at the moon mode. So I had my focus on certain things. But I had finally felt presence behind me. And then I turn my focus and I see three great big beings. I assume now that they appeared that way because that's a good way to hold my attention. Although I wonder, you know, what is their true form? Is it just a big ball of light? And, you know, because if they had shown themselves as a big ball of light, I probably wouldn't have really thought to pay attention to it. I wouldn't have held my attention and I would have just went off and done my own thing. Because at the time, you know, I'm going to see a ball of light. Okay, cool. What's that? I don't care about that. And then I keep going. So to see three big beings definitely grabbed my attention, held my focus. And they were made of light and it was flowing energy. I'd say it was like all white. Once in a while, you know, a little bit of, you know, color would ebb and flow in there, maybe blue and little sparkles here and there. But it was mostly just flowing energy up and down, flowing. And they didn't have feet because they had this robe that was made out of the same energy that their face and their arms were made out of. It was part of their body. Excuse me. And so they were faceless. It sounds creepy, but it wasn't. They didn't have distinguishable facial features or anything, you know, apart from having arms and hand and the robe. And then they had great big wings, no feathers. It was, again, you know, the wings looked like they were energy flowing outside and then back into their body. And the wings kind of looked like, I would say, like a, like, you know, an angel that you would see, a picture of an angel. Again, you know, I think that that form was to hold my attention, but they were so big. I don't know why they had to be so big. and they stayed that size. Two of them stayed back and one got up and it slowly approached me. It had a masculine sounding voice. I say voice. So you know how, like, when you, some people, you probably have a voice inside your head. Some people do, some people don't. Sometimes a voice can take different sounds when you're reading or something like that. That's kind of what it was like communicating. You could just kind of hear, you could hear each other. And you had a sense of what the other person was feeling. And at this point, I hadn't known that they could read my thoughts. So anyway, this big one comes up to me to stay behind. And I am so small. I am probably at like just under where a knee would be to how big this being is next to me. And I don't know if he shrunk in size or if I just imagined him being bigger than he was, or, you know, what was going on. But that's kind of, you know, where I was to this thing. I was like near the feet, if he had feet. Sorry. And it was a really welcoming presence. You know, it was like, please don't be afraid. And welcome. I'm so excited that you're back, you know. And I was really confused. I was like, do I know you? And he goes, what did you think of your life? And I complained about everything that a 10-year-old could complain about. And he goes, oh, okay, well, did you learn anything? And I was like, I mean, I guess, you know. And I didn't have really good answers. So I don't know how it got to this point, but he eventually shows me, like, gestures to the right, or to kind of like in front of us to the right. And this beautiful energy was flowing, and it made a river. And I know that there's another lady that I had listened to her near-death experience, and she talked about how she got to plan her return to her body, like how I did. And for her, they had manifested kind of like a board, and she got to pick out things and put things in, like a pegboard or something like that. But for me, it was a river. And so I think perhaps, obviously, you know, they're manifesting something that they know that you can understand and that makes sense to you. So a river to me made sense as a child, because we had a creek right near our farm, and I thought that was like the coolest thing ever. And it was because it was so calming, and that was like my favorite place to sneak off to and watch the river. So yeah, of course they're going to give me a river. And yeah. And so he gestured just towards the river, and I know, oh, I need to pay attention to this river. And as soon as I peer into the river, I see a great big boulder off to my right, and I see a great big boulder off to my left. And I go, what are those? And I wonder what those are. And he's like, well, that's the beginning of your life, and then that's your future end of your life. And there was a big boulder, like in the middle-ish, I don't know, like where I was standing, there was kind of a big one. And the energy was flowing around it. And he's like, that is for you to return or not return. That's this happening right now. And he's like, you have yet to make a decision. And it was a sense of, we can't move forwards with doing something unless you agree to it. And you don't have to go back to your body. And at that point I was like, what about my body? And they're like, I don't think they ever said you're dead, but it was, you're here with us now, but you can go back to your body if you need to, or you have the ability to go back to your body and, or stay here, or you can explore the universe, or you can go to like a layer or like a pocket. Some people call it like a pocket universe. Some people call it a layer of reality. You know, I don't know. I call it, think of it like an apartment or something. Or, you know, like Earth. You know, we have Earth, and on Earth we have different areas where different people reside. And so in the place that I was, it was big spiritual Earth, I guess. And there's different areas where different spirits reside. And I had the opportunity, if I wanted to go to one. And I didn't really care to go to one because I was still heavily emotionally connected to my family, to the animals, to the farm. But, you know, I looked into this river nonetheless, and I knew that, you know, I could either grab these pebbles and look at them, or these little rocks in the river and look at them, or, you know, just stare into it. And what happened next was like a holograph. Things from my life started popping up in front of me, and it was like an immersive experience. I was kind of surrounded in it, and it felt like I was part of it, and I could see myself from third person. I didn't realize when I first started watching this that it was my life that I was watching. I mean, yeah, we talked about the river and, you know, the rocks representing my life and everything, and parts of my life or turning points. And, but I didn't, you know, I don't know why. but I surrounded by this holographic immersive thing of my life, and I'm watching from third person. And when I wanted to know something, I could sense it fully. For example, I wanted to know what I was thinking. I wanted to know what they were thinking. I could, I don't know, become part of that. And I could, and even without wanting to know, I suppose, because I was a very curious kid, so I wanted to know for sure. But I guess, you know, I didn't have to wonder. I could just watch it, because there were moments and memories where I didn't care what the other person thought. But during the life review, I heard what they thought anyways. And I saw why they acted the way that they acted. And so coming back from my near-death experience, I had a huge interest in psychology because of watching the near-death experience. And I was like, wow, why do we do what we do? And what are you thinking? And what are you feeling? And why? And how does that impact somebody else? And I guess for a quick explanation, there was a memory that I had watched where I went off into the pasture with the cows, and I was maybe 2 years old. And I was curious about my surroundings, and my parents were so angry and worried and scared, and they're running around looking for me. And then I hear them calling my name, and I come up to the top of the hill and I go, hi. And I like wave my hand, and they start yelling at me and they get angry. And then I'm like, and then I get scared. but I got to feel what each person that was looking for me, what they felt and what they were thinking. And that was interesting. And there was another memory that I had seen that was, I got to feel what my cat felt. I had a one of those tools that you press the button and it goes and it spins, like you can put nails in the, anyway, it's a tool that you use. And so I didn't put any, I didn't have a nail in it or anything like that, but it would spin. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do this long haired cat's fur. I'm going to curl its hair. I thought it was a curling iron. And I did that to the cat's fur and it bunched up the fur. Luckily, the cat wasn't injured apart from being feared. It's just being scared to death. Poor thing. And I remember seeing, like, feeling my fear again. And, you know, I killed the cat and crying. But the cat was fine. And I felt the cat's fear and the pain. And so after this near-death experience, how that impacted me was that I was afraid to kill even, like, to, like, squish a spider. And I can't handle. I know people are like, oh, they're so cute and they're helpful and you live in harmony with them and they eat bugs and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but they crawl across me and why do they have so many legs? And it's just, and they have so many eyes. But I remember, like, to this day, I'm a lot better about it now, but I used to cry if somebody was like, squish the spider, and I'm like, I can't. I couldn't touch the spider. I couldn't scoop up. I don't want to touch it. I don't want to, you know, if I saw a spider in a room when I was a kid after this experience, I would just leave the room for a couple days. Like even if it was my bedroom, I would go sleep on the couch and I'd be like, they get to live in that room for a couple days and I'll come back and I'll see if they're gone. If not, I'm going to come back later. It was really bad, you know? But, you know, I eventually got over that fear of spiders and I'm a lot better about being able to, you know, stick a cup on them, you know, get some paper, put them outside where they belong. But this experience made me understand that our feeling, like, I'll feel that later, you know. If I don't have a good reason for squishing a spider, you know, if it's biting me or if it's gonna kill me, you know, there's a reason, I suppose. But, you know, I got afraid of doing that sort of thing. Because it just made me understand that, you know, we feel how we make others feel. And it felt like I had the opportunity during this life review to kind of balance my energy, kind of like balancing karma, you know, because they say karma is, you know, everything comes back to you. Well, yeah, definitely. I'd say during the life review, everything's coming back to you. And you're really feeling the consequences of your actions and how they impact others and how that makes other people do things because of you. So it was a very balancing thing. But then I later had learned that what we do in one life impacts what happens in another life. So there's still that sort of, I don't know if you want to call that karma too. I don't know.
Hello, this is me, Simon. Did you know that during a past life regression, you can meet with your spirit guide? I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom, and I've guided many clients to a spiritual encounter with their guide. If you would like to ask me how a session would work for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. I wanted to ask you about this river, because I think the spiritual being said to you the energy of the river represented your life force, and there were multiple timelines that your energy was taking part in.
Yes, absolutely. That still confuses me to this day. I don't know how to say this. There were different strands, like different strings, and they flowed like a river. And so, yeah, that represented my life and my energy. And other people, you know, were a part of that as well. And their energy, anybody that I interacted with, would impact that too. And I'm trying to think, what's a good way to explain it? Within those waves were different strands, I guess. And it was an understanding that all of your memories right now are still being formed. And all of those other energy that's also your energy somehow is stored and ready for you to access whenever you want. And it was never said that they were my past lives. So I don't know, but it was an understanding that it was everything was happening now in the ever-present moment. And gosh, it's very interesting. It's so hard to explain.
So it wasn't a thing where there were lots of you in different dimensions or different universes. It was more like there was lots of different lives, like past lives.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that there were lots of different past lives, other lives, whatever. I think maybe they didn't call it a past life because to them, time is like a tool that they can kind of use or work with. And so they don't really see time like how we see it, because they can access it. You know, time behaves differently for them in different, you know, depending on where you are. And I know people talk about like many worlds theory and all that stuff. It's not, I don't really understand that fully, but it's not what I experienced exactly. I saw many possible futures that could happen in that river. And there were probabilities, and it's a lot like the double slit experiment. Is what I related to, at least, in that if I'm all of these possibilities were available to us to look at, I could see if I make this choice, all these other things are going to happen. But it wasn't that I was, another life or another parallel universe or something like that. At least that's not how I understood it. How I understood it was, if I choose this, then I'm going to experience that. If I choose this, then I will experience that. So it was definitely just my possible, probable future.
And I think you said also what your energy does in one timeline affects the karma in another timeline. So it's like it's not past lives one after the other. There's a constant interaction between the timelines and things going backwards and forwards.
I wonder, I don't know if they were referring to past lives or if they were referring to any future lives. So I'm unclear on that. And so I definitely say it definitely leaves the door open for multiple timelines happening at once. Cause I never asked, which is awful. I want to ask now. But yeah, so it's a lot. Sorry. I was going to be like, could you repeat the question? Cause my brain was going all kinds of places and I was like, oh no.
It's just that idea that it was something to do with karma, and that what you do in one timeline affects the karma in another timeline.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, sorry. Yes, so anything moving forwards is basically what it was, because it was everything in the present moment is so important for shaping your anything that happens in the future. So they did show me some of my other lives, and I got to see how some of those other lives impacted the next life, and the next life impacted the next one. And so I think maybe that's what they were referring to when I got that information. Because now I'm like, oh, so I'm living this sort of life because of things that happened at another time, things that I had chosen at another time. Because it was understanding that I can't change the past, like in this life. And that's an understanding that people that astral project understand too. Cause when you astral project, I guess some people report being able to time travel and, or like look into past lives and things like that. And I haven't been able to do that yet. I can't figure that out.
There were rocks in the river Were they kind of incidents and problems that we might have in our life? And depending on how big the rock is, depends how big a problem it is.
I think you understand it well. Yes. I think that that's what those rocks were. Because, you know, the first one at the end represented my birth, you know, as a big thing. You can't really get around that. And that's when my energy kind of flowed around it in one little tiny stream. And that's the beginning of when I chose to come here. And then that's when it started branching out. And there were more rocks, and there were big ones and little ones. And yes, absolutely. When you put the rock in the place, it's meant to change the flow of my life. It's meant to, yeah, definitely. You definitely understand it well, that it kind of helps nudge you towards where you need to go. And it breaks down the possible futures. So the bigger the rock, the more likely that you have to have a certain experience.
And so these spiritual beings that you were with, I think you said you had an idea that they'd been watching over for you for your entire life. Do you think they're like what people would call spirit guides?
Yeah, I have no idea what they were, because I still don't really want to label them, but here I am finding myself labeling them anyway. I personally call them beings of light and love, because they were made of light and they were very, very loving. Unconditional loving. You know, I could do no wrong in their eyes. You know, if I did something wrong, I was seen as naive, or I was misled. Oops. And I could do no wrong. So long as I was willing to learn from my mistakes and do better and expand my consciousness, so to speak, then I was, you know, they were so happy to have me with them. And even if I chose not to, they would just be like, oh, she's a lost spirit, but we'll still try to contact you and bring you back to us, no matter how many, you know, decades that takes. So I guess that's, you know, that is a definition of spirit guide. It's a definition of a lot of things, and something that I'm like, okay, that's a really powerful spirit guide, because he had also said, I helped make this life with you. I helped form your energy for this life. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh, are you God or something? And if you're not God, then you're a very powerful entity with the power to, you know, wield time as if it's a tool, with the power to weave, you know, and to see my, you know, different possible futures. And I'm like, that's an amazing, whatever the heck that is. So yeah, I don't really label them, but, you know, he said that he had made my energy and he helped me plan different things. Excuse me. And he had been with me throughout all of my lives, incarnations.
And it seemed interesting to me that you say how much they were happy to be in your presence. And I kind of imagine this incredible being of light that's so tall. And you think, wow, this is amazing being in their presence. But they're overjoyed with being with me, little me here.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly the feeling. Why are they so happy to see me? what's so amazing about me? And it was like, wow, they're really, because we are eternal beings too, you know, you and me, we're both everybody. Every human is an eternal energy. We can't, like, the physical body dies, but our consciousness is an energy that carries on. And our information of this life, of each incarnation, wherever we are, is stored in the cosmos somewhere. And we have the ability to access that. And yeah, so it's like being reunited with, like, a lifelong friend. Or how he put it, he said, you have my energy within you. You are made up of my energy. We have the same energy. So he said it in many different ways, because it was more of a, like, it was an understanding. So it can be said in so many different ways. And I was like, wow, cool. And I looked at myself, like I drew my attention towards whatever the heck I was. And I could see that I was made of light. And I was like, wow, cool. My energy at that time was mostly white, but it had a lot of yellow in it and had some blue in it. And so it would like ebb and flow with those different colors, mostly white though at this point. And I thought that was cool. And I could manifest a hand, but my hand would be glowing white. Like a normal human hand, but fully white and glowing. And I thought that was cool because it looked kind of like them. So we definitely part of them. Sorry if I'm going way off track here.
No, that's okay. Well, there's a sentence in your book that stood out to me where you say, the universe is an energetic self-sorting machine. What do you mean by that?
Oh, that is a great question. What do I mean by that? self-sorting energetic machine. We go where our thoughts go. We go where our beliefs go. And the universe kind of just lets you go there. You know, we are part of the universe, obviously. So we, you know, that's how we get sorted. We sort ourselves. But some people are not aware that they sort themselves with their thoughts and their beliefs. And so they'll find themselves in different parts of this astral realm or whatever you want to call it. And another thing is that like-minded spirits attract like-minded spirits. But that doesn't mean that a more bitter or negative or mean or rude entity or spirit cannot interact with you. They can try to communicate or talk with you, but they can't come too close to you because you are energy, and your energy, if it's not like theirs in any way, it's going to be repelling them. There's going to be like a barrier between you. I relate this to, or I'll give an example of when I went over to my dad, my energy must have repelled the shadow person, because it didn't want anything to do with me when I was near him. And likewise, when I had my first time astral projecting, I saw another shadow person who was watching me sleep, which is freaky. And it wanted to talk to me, and it couldn't come any closer because my energy is not like it. I was like, nope, I don't want to talk to you. I don't have time to talk to you. I gotta go try and find these light beings and ask them questions, because that's the whole reason why I wanted to astral project, is just get information. And my energy repelled it. So energy sorts itself.
So that kind of, like you were saying, a spirit will have a certain energy and they create a lower vibrational kind of pocket reality where that's the right place for their frequency.
Yeah, that's beautifully said.
Oh, great. Also, it says in the book, I think that there are beings of lower frequency that by their existence, they help balance out the energies in the universe, and that kind of brings harmony that there are lower frequency beings.
Right, right. Kind of like the yin and yang kind of thing. Because everything exists sort of on a spectrum, right? And we kind of need that spectrum to exist, right? So when, for example, in our life, I needed to experience a bad thing in order to really appreciate the good thing in my life. Because if I had always had good things and nothing bad, you know, what is there to be grateful for? I don't know any better. I don't know any worse. There needs to be a slight pain in my life, a negative thing to happen for me to really appreciate or enjoy or understand how good the good is.
Okay, well, it's been great talking to you.
Yeah.
The book is called What Have You Learned? Demystifying My Childhood NDE. People can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yeah. Yeah, the ebook or the, I think I'm working on a paperback version as well.
Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Simon. It's been a pleasure.
This week, I was talking to Galadriel Crump about her book, What Have You Learned? Demystifying My Childhood NDE. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon. When you subscribe for $6 a month, you get exclusive access to an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get access to an extended episode every month. And you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every week. And you can find it on almost every podcast app. I also have a tier in the Our Paranormal Afterlife Patreon campaign, where for $13.50 a month, you can get the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes every week, as well as the Our Paranormal Afterlife extended episodes. Including the Alien UFO Podcast episodes, there are now more than 100 extended episodes available in the back catalogue. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And look out for the Our Paranormal Afterlife episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every week. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.